Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
McNeil and Parkins flashback.
We're talking to Steve Stone here, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Stoney, we were joking before you came on that sometimes it felt like the White Sox broadcast booth was practicing social distancing before it was cool with you and Hawk at the other opposite ends of the booth all those years.
We are waiting on a report on Todd Frazier.
All right, I just saw him.
And?
So there was some room in between us, certainly.
What is your pre-game routine, if you will, in order to be really comfortable before you call a baseball game?
Well, it's gotten to be music, actually. I like mostly rock music, so Pour Some Sugar on Me with Def Leppard has become one of my favorites, and when I wanted to get going, I would put that on.
Pour Some Sugar on all of us here, I guess. Great song.
You can only tell one Harry Carey drinking story. Which one are you telling?
That's like asking Henny Youngman to tell one joke. The people don't know Henny Youngman, but let's take it to...
I do, Steve.
How are you all? I'm glad to be here. Take my wife, please. I take my wife everywhere, but she finds her way home. I said, where do you want to go for your anniversary? She said, I want to go somewhere I've never been before. I said, try the kitchen. I love this crowd.
They arrange for President Reagan to call Harry in the booth. He gets the call, they put it through, and here's President Reagan.
Well, Harry, thank you very much. You know, in a few months, I'm going to be out of work, and I thought I might as well audition.
And then he starts talking about Nancy Reagan's ties to Chicago. He said, you know, my wife, Nancy, has some ties to Chicago. And then Harry said, Mr. President, I got to hang up. Bobby Dernier just got a bunt single, and it looks like the Cubs have a rally going. And click, he hung up on the President of the United States in mid-Nancy Reagan story. So, yeah, that's kind of the way Harry did things.
It's not often that the President of the United States has trouble getting a few words in edgewise.
Holy cow!
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
One of the best guests of Score Stories, Steve Stone, White Sox color analyst. We're tracking him down now. Hopefully he'll be with us in a matter of moments here on The Score. Wanted to catch up with him, see how he's feeling about the return of baseball, and just check in with our good friend Steve Stone.
Yeah, I look forward to the opportunity. Anytime we can talk baseball with Stoney, and I want to hit him with something that Matt Spiegel had on Marquee the other day. I saw on his Facebook he put together an all-time Cubs lineup that I wanted to run something by Stoney for the Wayback Machine, something, a couple of things I thought were kind of interesting and worthy of a veteran, venerable voice. On baseball before my time a little bit. So that will be fun. It always is. And selfishly, I want to know how the Phoenix area looks because I've got that as my only target in America for the rest of the year with a stop at some RV park in Colorado on the way. My little brother lives in Phoenix. I'm going to be staying at an RV park and practicing responsible social distancing. But I'm wondering what the vibe is like in Arizona, where usually things are pretty much the wild, wild west, you know, and having a gun is an asset in Phoenix. They encourage you to carry your gun in public. They had to move the annual gun show into the building where the Arizona Cardinals play. Because where the Coyotes played, it wasn't big enough. You can't do it. It's like going from the United Center to Soldier Field. Think about that. It's amazing.
Well, Soldier Field, not big enough because you can have a Super Bowl in where the Cardinals play.
That's very true. Yes. Come on, Ted Phillips, get us a stadium that'll hold the Arizona Gun Show.
These are the types of events we're missing out on. Oh, good. Steve Stone is with us now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Stoney, we were just reliving some of our favorite moments from when you came on and told all of those great stories last time. It's always a pleasure. How are you doing today?
Well, good. Things are very nice down here in Arizona, trying to fill some time and looking forward to hopefully a baseball season. But there's a little negotiating to be done, I believe, between then and now.
Are you optimistic that we're going to have baseball still?
Well, I am, because I think there's two sides that are they're both anxious to play. It's just a case of working out the details, which, believe me, it's not an easy thing to do. There's a lot of components here. Obviously, the owners would like to see the players take a little less money than the initial prorated. Let's say if they play, let's just put the number at 50%. They play 50% of the games. The players, their response was, well, we'd like our prorated 50% of the revenues. I think the owners realizing, though, and I think when they made that, that deal in March, I don't think they realized that there would be no fans, which means quite obviously no tickets, no concessions, no parking, no skyboxes, no nothing. And so so I think it's not an easy negotiation. However, I think there probably is a middle ground. I'm pretty much hoping that people on both sides of the equation find that middle ground economically, and then they can work out the logistics to make sure that everybody's safe. I think there's two real important components to this. And the players have to feel that they're as safe as possible when they go back and play. And the owners have to feel that if they do go back and play, they will be able to recoup some of the money that they've lost.
I want to ask you to, I guess, speculate on how players are going to feel about this, assuming they can work out all the deals, everything financially. What right now, Steve, percentage of players do you think would be willing to report under the current climate we're operating in, or the climate you anticipate to be in existence a month from now when maybe this starts to shake out?
Well, that's really a good question, and it's one that I can't give you a definitive answer to. I do know in my heart of hearts that there will be some players who say, I just don't want to come back this year. I don't know how many there's going to be, but I believe there's going to be a few that do that. And I think one of the things that baseball has to understand is if the guys do that, then give them a pass for this year. I mean, quite obviously, they're not going to get paid, but they'll come back when they feel it's safe enough to do that. I don't know what percentage it's really going to be that says, okay, I just don't think it's going to be safe, as opposed to a percentage who said, you know what, if you look at the numbers for people in my age group, it's not near as devastating as it is for people in other age groups. Certainly the over 65, it's not a great thing to have, we know that. But these players are very young, they're in great shape, they're very strong. More times than not, if they do get it, they're number one, asymptomatic, or two, have a very light case. So when they work out the logistics of what you're doing, I think they said that anybody who tests positive immediately goes into quarantine. There's just a lot of things to consider. How many people are going to be in this bubble? I don't think anybody knows definitively, but I know they want to make it as small as possible. And then, from a personal standpoint, what are the broadcasts going to look like? Are we going to broadcast from one area? Are we going to broadcast, do they want the broadcasters to go with the team or stay out of that bubble, whatever it is? And these are things to be decided, and it's pretty intricate. This is, it's one thing to negotiate the collective bargaining agreement, which is just around the corner, but it's another thing to factor in this pandemic and then try to get everybody as safe as possible while trying to carry on whatever type of season they're going to have.
Yeah, Stoney, that's the part that is, I assume that the millionaires and billionaires will work out the money, because it would just be such a horrible look for them not to, considering 30 million plus unemployed. So that aside for a second, when I read the ESPN report on what the proposal is for just the logistics of playing baseball or attempting to play baseball safely during a pandemic, and it includes no high-fiving, no spitting, no showering at the stadium, no taking Ubers or taxis to and from the stadium. Like, how the hell are they going to pull this off when umpires are not young and healthy, managers, coaches? Like, it just, it feels to me like what will happen is we're going to try this, we're going to start it up, and then there's going to be some sort of hole in the balloon. It's going to deflate, and we're going to have to hit pause on the season. That's how I'm feeling right now.
Well, I really am hoping that that is not the case. And I know that there is a worst-case scenario, and this is something, this is the doomsday scenario as far as ownership is concerned, and should be as far as the baseball players are concerned, and that is a potential, and again, this isn't to throw a bucket of cold water on this proposal, but the potential of getting ready, starting it, and then for one shape, one reason, one situation, one whatever comes along, you don't have the playoffs, because that's where the big payoff is for ownership is, you know, playoff baseball, which is, there's going to be the way it's situated, there's supposed to be another tier of playoff baseball. And, you know, you'd be able to salvage something of this year. So there is so much uncertainty. I like to always take the positive viewpoint. I like to think that there will be something worked out. I know it's going to be very difficult, believe me. I mean, you mentioned all of the considerations, and there's probably 15 more things that we didn't really think about, you know, as far as staying in hotels and getting on buses and getting on planes and going through whatever deserted airports and parts of, you know, the areas that players go through. I honestly couldn't tell you what it's going to look like. I just, in my heart of hearts, am hoping that they get this situation resolved. And for the good of everybody, and it's not just the good of the players and the good of the owners. I believe for the good of the people in this country, they would like to see an everyday baseball season on whatever limited basis they can. I think the fans would love to see it. I think the people really need a diversion away from the way things have gone. This has been a very difficult time on most people. I don't have to tell you guys that, you know, we're doing some things in an extraordinary fashion that we never even thought of doing before. And the only thing that I can say is that there is a way to at least begin this, and then whatever happens, happens. But I hope that they find that way.
Do you think it would be worthwhile then to start it if it's pretty much, if the medical community feels it's a certainty that it's going to be put on hold, you think it's worthwhile to start it anyway?
Well, no, Dan. I mean, first of all, it's not a certainty that it's going to be put on hold. I don't think, you know, the funny thing is, and you do the same thing, I think all of us do, you're watching news stories, you're watching various programs coming on television, listening on the radio, reading in newspapers, getting in magazines, and you find that everybody has a different opinion. I mean, some people will tell you, yeah, it's this is really bad across the board. Then you hear, you know what, we're not that far away from getting something that will at least help take care of this if you get it. Then, of course, people talking about the vaccines, we all know that that's going to be down the road somewhat. But then you have a doctor saying that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, mortality rate's going to be much less than 1%. And you're thinking, well, you know, that's maybe a little bit higher than the flu, but maybe not. And again, you're hearing divergent opinions on a daily basis, where if you are glued to the news on a daily basis, your head starts to spin. So there are no definitive answers to all of this. And if they can keep everybody safe and play it by testing every day and making sure that all of these guys are healthy and they do travel in what they're terming this almost a hermetically sealed bubble, hermetically sealing as much as they possibly can. I mean, if that's the case, I think everybody would like to see it. And because no one knows if it's definitively going to get shut down, if they can get done with 82 games and have a playoff season and a World Series, I think it would be wonderful for a whole lot of people.
It would be amazing. Like, if they can pull it off, it would be absolutely amazing.
You're right. It would be.
Yeah, and this the logistics that they're presenting right now, just the hoops to jump through, it seems a lot further away to me than the 4th of July. Again, I hope I'm wrong. I'm rooting like hell for sports to return, Stoney. Like, the idea of doing 4 hours a day of sports talk radio with no sports, trust me, I'd love the games to be back. But when I read this stuff, it seems so damn complicated that 4th of July seems like it's right around the corner to pull all of this off.
Well, look, the challenges are enormous, and everybody knows that. But the downside of this, just calling an end to this year and moving on to next year, I don't think that's appetizing for a whole lot of folks. And, you know, I hear some of the players and how they're reacting to this, and I hear some other players and how they're reacting. And I listen to what former players have to say. And, you know, you listen to Tom Glavine, what he said the other day. And Mark Teixeira came out and said he thinks the players should make the accommodation. So everybody has a different opinion. And then, of course, Blake Snell comes out and says maybe he uses a poor choice of words and didn't appear to be one of the great quotes to come from the player's side of the equation. But, you know, he got across his point, and his point is that he would like to see baseball and being able to get paid for it. And I think there's a lot of people, a lot of players certainly that feel that way. And a lot of owners, because, look, the ownership group is not a public utility. So that doesn't mean the show has to go on regardless of the cost, because this is a business, and it's a big business, and these guys are businessmen. And if they can put it out on a two-pronged idea, one is you can make a little money, and two, you can certainly keep it safe. Neither one is going to be the first thing that's important. They're both going to be equally as important. If the owners and if baseball feels they can do that, and then the Players Association accepts that they can do that, then you go through with it and you do it to the best of your ability for as long as this works. And if it does work, I agree with you, Dan, that it would be remarkable. It would be remarkable. But it would be so wonderfully enjoyable that it certainly is worth the idea of giving it a try.
Stoney, you said everybody has an opinion, and I can't with a clear conscience not share mine with you, because we went on rants about it in the first hour of the show.
Sure.
My feeling is an America that needs to have his baseball is an America that needs to reexamine its priorities, or any other sport. I think it's sad that people expect these baseball players and anybody broadcast, whoever is affiliated with it, because they need a pick-me-up. That saddens me that that's where our perspective is in the 21st century.
Well, I think it becomes part of a lot of people's lives, Dan. Do they need it to survive? No, they don't. Is life more enjoyable with it? Yes, it is. So, look, if you don't have a baseball season, will you get by? Of course you will. We had 1994. We saw what happened. And everybody got by, and you started in 1995. Now, you lost one franchise in Montreal over that, but you lost it. Postseason was lost, and everybody came back. So, you know, I think that it, personally, because it's been a lifelong pursuit of mine, I think it makes life better. Can you live life without it? Yeah, I think everybody will find out they can live life without it. I just don't think they want to try that. So people are resilient. They'll make the accommodation and live life whatever is presented to them. But I think they feel that it's much more enjoyable with this. So I think that's why so many people want to see it played. But again, if it's not played for whatever reason, everybody will get over it. You pick up again next year.
Stoney, one of the things we've been talking about a lot on the show is The Last Dance, and I saw on Twitter you said that you interviewed Michael Jordan in 1984. We loved your stories last time so much. What was your favorite interaction that you ever had with MJ?
Well, when I interviewed him, he was right out of North Carolina, and, you know, and everybody knew he'd be a good player. I don't think anybody at that time would have said he'd be the guy that we saw in The Last Dance. what you couldn't see about him at the time was the phenomenal drive that he had, the ability to focus everything on one moment, live in the moment. That's pretty much what came out of The Last Dance, what his approach was. I was struck by the fact that he was a very nice guy. I mean, he was a smart guy. He was a nice guy. I had no idea of his basketball acumen, but quite obviously coming out of North Carolina, it was pretty good and only got better. So that was one of the more interesting of the interviews that we did. And I just was struck by the fact that he seemed to be maybe even a little bit shy at the time. I think that's, you know, that's probably one of the things that came out of that. But one of the great things that that happened to me during my whole career and spending it mostly in Chicago, except for four years that I was in Baltimore. I got a chance to see a lot of those Michael Jordan games live. And I felt at the time, and I told people at the time, and I'll tell them the same thing now, but it's well past the opportunity to do that. But it's to tell people, if you get a chance to see him live, you have to go see him, because you're watching Babe Ruth. And you probably never got a chance to watch Babe Ruth, but this is the Babe Ruth of basketball. I didn't think his like would ever come back again. I thought that once Michael decided to not play any longer, we'd never see a Michael again. We'd see wonderful players, just like you've seen a lot of great baseball players. You never saw another Babe Ruth, and I don't believe you're ever going to see another Michael Jordan.
Did he ever, like, when he would come up to the booth or anything like that, any behind the scenes stuff from all these first pitches and singing the stretch or anything like that, any interactions with him in that capacity?
Not really. I think the funniest thing that I heard that he said was he was at the game, and of course he was invited into the booth, and he declined to come into the booth that particular day because he said he didn't want to have Harry call him Michael Jackson. So I thought that was
pretty good.
I thought that was pretty good. But he didn't come up to the booth a lot. When he came to the game, he came to enjoy the game. He loved the game of baseball, and he came to enjoy the game of baseball. But, you know, his celebrity at the level that he was made life a little more difficult to circumvent than most people. I mean, you know, whether you're known or not, whether you're known in Chicago or other places, you go out, you still have a good time. Michael couldn't really do that because he was pretty much mobbed wherever he went. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have to have some people around you that make sure of your safety, I think sometimes that that type of celebrity, that magnitude of celebrity might get old, might get very difficult for you. And Michael grew into that type of celebrity.
Yeah, he did. You can have it. Stoney, baseball question for me, 60 seconds or less in the Wayback Machine. Our colleague Matt Spiegel put together an all-time Cubs lineup the other day. And his catcher was David Ross. You know, I don't know at any point in David Ross's career if he was ever Gabby Hartnett or Randy Hundley, but the position I want to ask you about is left field. He chose Lou Brock over the Whistler. Lou Brock will lead off on Matt Spiegel's all-time Cubs lineup, and Billy Williams is on the outside looking in.
Well, the only difference is if you say it's an all-time Cub lineup, take a look at what Lou Brock did with the Cubs and take a look at what Billy Williams did, and you'll realize that as a Cub, mm-hmm. Billy Williams, because he was there a lot longer, dwarfs the numbers of Lou Brock. If you're, you know, if you want to have just anybody who passed through Cubdom, yes, as that kind of thing, you know, then it's a different story. I mean, for a leadoff hitter, just a prototype leadoff hitter in the game, the way it was structured at the time, Lou Brock probably was a better man to lead off than Billy Williams, because he could get on and he would drive you crazy. He would steal bases. He would single and double you to death, hit the ball out of the park occasionally. Was he as good a pure hitter as Billy Williams, or as devastating as Billy Williams? No. But if you're looking for a leadoff hitter, Brock was one of those. And I got to tell you something. God forbid he got on base, because it would drive you nuts, because he drove me nuts. And I just realized that he was one of the most prolific base stealers this game has ever seen and a disruptor of the game of baseball. But, you know, as a guy who could turn around a game with one swing of the bat, that was Billy Williams. So take your choices. You mean he didn't go with Dave Kingman?
No, Kingman did not make it. You know, and I thought about it after I was initially very hurt by the suggestion because Billy was my childhood hero from a baseball player's standpoint. And then after I thought about it, I said, you know, it may not be that crazy. Because Brock changed the game when stealing bases meant something very much, very important.
Well,
to
he disrupted the game. He gave you a whole lot to think about when you weren't thinking about the next hitter. And I think that's why that's why Lou was so devastating.
Stoney, as always, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Okay, guys, take care. And I hope that when we reconvene. We're a little closer to this game opening up, and they satisfy all the demands of both sides. That's all I can say. I know, guys, there is a middle ground somewhere. There always is, and hopefully they can find it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That okay, is Steve boys. Stone. Take care.
Yep.
Thanks,
Thank
Stoney.
You. That's Steve Stone, the White Sox color analyst. We can react to that on the other side. Scott Podsednik coming up at 4 o'clock. It's McNeil and Parkins on the screen.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Elon Musk, ladies and gentlemen.
So is that a joint? Or is it a cigar?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
It's marijuana inside of tobacco.
Okay. So it's like posh pot tobacco,
yeah.
Posh.
You never had that?
Yeah, I think I tried one once.
Come on, man. You probably can't because stockholders, right?
I mean, it's legal, right? It's
totally legal.
Okay.
How does that work? Do people get upset at you if you do certain things? There's tobacco and marijuana in there. That's all it is. The combination of tobacco and marijuana is wonderful. First turned onto it by Charlie Murphy and then reignited by Dave Chappelle. There you go.
Plus whiskey.
Exactly.
Perfect. Balances it out.
That was an all-time podcast moment on the Joe Rogan Experience. Thanks again to Steve Stone for joining the show. This segment of McNeil and Parkins brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. World Series hero and Sox legend Scott Podsednik going to join us for some stories coming up at 4 o'clock. That was when the CEO of Tesla, Elon Musk, smoked a spliff with Joe Rogan live on his podcast, which is listened to and watched by millions between YouTube, the live stream, and the podcast download. It did a number on Tesla's stock price the next day, which is completely nonsensical, but that's the level of power that Joe Rogan has risen to, arguably the most influential digital media star in the game. And I don't know if you saw the financials on this, Mac, but Spotify who recently purchased The Ringer, Bill Simmons's pop culture and sports website, for a reported $200 million, mainly for the podcast network, because Spotify, of course, is an audio company. They just purchased the rights to the Joe Rogan Experience starting in September, and then exclusively in January. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Joe Rogan's cut of this multi-year agreement, two-year agreement, north of $100 million, and Spotify's market cap, their stock price, has risen to the tune of $4.5 billion in the last 24 hours, with yesterday's trading and today's so far. $4.5 billion after they acquired the Joe Rogan podcast.
Wow. I just punched in what Tesla is trading at, and I'm not very familiar. I know a little bit about the company, but I've not ever considered buying or anything. It's trading at $815 a share. What was it trading at? Now it's up a little bit today. It's up $7.50 today, which is about a little less than 1%. Where was it?
The Tesla Musk marijuana flap was like 17 Tesla scandals ago, and much lower stock price, and Elon Musk is a genius and a crazy person all at the same time, and he moves the market with his tweets and with, you know, like, he's got just as good a chance to sink that company or put men on Mars. Like,
I wouldn't have guessed a Tesla buyer to have an issue with the guy who runs it all being a pot smoker. I would have expected a Tesla type. I guess I'm stereotyping those who buy cars that are, you know, all about clean energy, and because that's what Tesla is. And that surprises me that people aren't more liberal thinking when it comes to marijuana, that it would, his presence on that would have an effect on the stock price. That's odd to me.
There was, you know how it is. It's not necessarily just the people who would buy a Tesla that move the stock price, right? It's the big money makers and the people at the investment banks and shareholders and that sort of thing. But Joe Rogan's podcast going for 9 figures to himself and rallying Spotify in that much. I'm fascinated by this story. And like, whether you're a Rogan fan or not, and I am a fan, don't listen to the full length of basically anything. I watch some clips on YouTube. I, like anybody, do not agree with 100% of the things that he says or all of his tactics. The thing I've been most critical of him was, like, he got so big and so mainstream in the last couple of years that I think at times he has lacked judgment on, like, with great power comes great responsibility. And he doesn't see that, like, when he puts some people on, that it legitimizes them, because he is, like, he looked at himself as being this, like, counterculture guy for so long.
Yeah.
But now when you have over 8 million subscribers to your YouTube page and you're the number one podcast on the internet, like, you're no longer counterculture, you're mainstream. So when you put Alex Jones on, who says that the kids at Newtown were not really murdered and it was a government hoax, like, that's dangerous and hurtful. And so, like, I don't agree with everything that Rogan does or says, but he's a really funny dude. And if I could have any podcast under my umbrella as an audio company like Spotify, he'd be the number one pick in the draft. And yeah. I think it's so interesting that, like, where the business is going, and we talk about, like, the effects of radio and now everybody has a podcast and all that. Like, he's done, I think it's almost 1,500 episodes of his podcast. They are usually 2-3 hours in length. There is no more influential person in the digital media space than the ex-Fear Factor guy who is the UFC commentator who started a podcast with his comedian pot-smoking friends. It's a truly remarkable, like, media startup in the 21st century story.
Yeah, it is, and I'm glad somebody is going to be getting paid for a while, and that's good news. Because the nature of talk in our format or related formats has changed dramatically, and that's where the money is going to wind up. And I've had several somewhat discouraging, dispiriting conversations in the last couple of days with a couple guys you know who were in our business and now are on the outside looking in, and both of them looking at lives that won't include sports radio ever again. And they both were very, very good at what they did, but that's just coming to grips with reality on where our business is. So if podcasting and YouTubing, you could YouTube it up, Don Cooper, that's where the money is going to go, and ultimately that's where you're going to wind up as a 33-year-old guy who wants to do this for 25 more years.
That's right. Texters are getting on me for what I said about Rogan putting on Alex Jones. And I agree with you, by the way. Like, I'm mad at myself for not having started a podcast on the side years and years ago when I started listening to podcasts. But I was always employed by a radio station, and the shows were podcasts, so it was always complicated contractually. But yeah, I feel like I'm late to the game with starting my own independent podcast, because I agree with you that that is where this thing is going. Someone says, the idea that interviewing someone is supporting all of their views, it's so lazy and stupid. That's not what I said. I didn't say that Joe Rogan agrees with Alex Jones. I'm saying that simply putting him on that platform legitimizes him in a way that I disagree with. You can disagree with that, but when you see, when there's two people sitting across from each other, and one is Joe Rogan and one is Alex Jones, the appearance of that is that they are equals, that they deserve the same format and forum and platform. And that is just not true. Like, it's Joe Rogan's to do with what he wants with his platform, but I think it's irresponsible. I wouldn't put that guy on CNN. I wouldn't put him on Fox News. I wouldn't put him on this radio show. And I certainly wouldn't put him on the Joe Rogan show. But, Tanny, I know you are a big fan. What did you make when you saw that this podcast was going to Spotify?
Yeah, first of all, good for him. I mean, you guys put in a lot of work. I mean, these are like, yep, you know, three or four podcasts in 3 hours in length every week with some of the biggest names in all walks of life. So good for Joe Rogan. This is a long time coming for him. You know, I immediately think selfishly, how will this affect my listening habits? Because I do try to and check his podcast out a lot. I don't have as much time anymore. I think I have too many podcasts that I try to listen to, but he is probably number one on my list of podcasts. But I don't know if that'll change my listening habits at all. I'm not a Spotify user, so I don't know if that's going to make me jump over there. And, you know, I enjoyed watching clips of the show on YouTube, so I don't know if that's going to be on there anymore either. Either it's going to be on that or under Spotify's, you know, if they have a channel on YouTube, I don't know how that's going to work. But, you know, you talk about normalizing. I hope it does kind of normalizing long, nuanced conversation with people from all walks of life and people who don't always agree with each other. But I think that's what he does best on that show. So I hope that does become more normalized and people don't, you know, clutch their pearls if there's someone from the far right or the far left, or, you know what I mean? I hope that becomes more normal and society is more embracing of nuanced discussion.
He's Spotify's great at that. Spotify's stock, by the way, today reached a 52-week high of $190.48, closing at $189.80. It looks like, which is up more than 8.5 points from yesterday, up almost $15. Man,
it is crazy. Like, yeah, the ability, like that type of, you know, one person media influence in 2020 with everything being so splintered is so damn rare.
When Howard did his huge deal with Sirius XM, that's when I said, all right, I don't need any other evidence. I'm buying Sirius XM. I'd been discouraged from it by an advisor, and I gave him a couple reasons why I liked it. Then Howard signs that deal, and I said, I'm in. People are going to want this, and it's going to work. And I was right.
Yeah, it's exactly, and that's what this Rogan thing feels like. It feels like it's that much of a game changer. Like when Howard Stern went to satellite radio, what Spotify will do with podcasts by getting Joe Rogan to do it, it feels like it's that much of a game changer in the media space. It was big for Bill Simmons, but just that's so many different podcasts with The Ringer, and Simmons was the biggest one, and it was sports, and you know, Simmons built his brand with ESPN. Rogan, as a startup of his own making, being able to sell that big to Spotify, it feels like a game changer in the digital space, and clearly in the very short term, it's paid off for Spotify. We'll see if it's an overreaction in the long run, but it's the biggest media story in a while, and it's a success one, and it's one for, if you care about audio, you're going to care about that Joe Rogan story to Spotify. So congratulations to him, because I agree with Tanny. Like, that is, that dude has put in the work. And when he endorses a political candidate, it makes news and sways voters. Like, I don't know who is a more influential media figure right now. Like, I think he'd be my number one pick.
Leapfrogging Howard.
I do, yeah. I just think the way that he speaks to people, like the accessibility of it, you know? Howard is still, it's on a pay service. So that's always going to limit your audience in some way. Like, you can't just listen to the podcast of the Howard Stern interview. I mean, now you can. Sirius is giving it away for free right now during the pandemic. But it's just, it's like on HBO, right? Like, you don't go to HBO to have the biggest audience. You go to have the highest level of quality content. That's kind of what satellite radio is. Whereas with Joe Rogan, podcast is free. The YouTube channel is free. These podcasts are listened to by millions of people each episode. That's more than the leading show on the number one cable network at Fox News. You know, like, mm-hmm. Anderson Cooper, Laura Ingraham, like, whoever you would say is the person of the day, Rachel Maddow, like, whoever you'd say, Rogan, episode in, episode out, has a bigger audience than all of them. So, yeah, I think you'd be my number one pick for most influential person in media, like, right now, this day, today. And they just put a value on it, $100 million over 2 years. Scott Pitsednik at 4 o'clock. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Galladay coming off a four-catch, 132-yard, one-touchdown performance in that loss in Oakland last week. Local guy, St. Rita High School here in Chicago. Same high school as Ray Manzarek of the Doors.
Really?
Yeah.
I love it when Ian Eagle on CBS gives us a rock and roll nugget about our fine city, Chicago IL, the hometown of Ray Manzarek, a co-founder of the Doors, who recorded on the Elektra label. Ray Manzarek, St. Rita High School, as Eagle mentioned, DePaul University. Died 7 years ago today at the age of 74, and I read a lot of rock and roll bios, and the best one I've ever plowed through was called Break On Through, The Life and Death of Jim Morrison. It's written by James Reardon and Jerry Prochnicki. Jerry is a local sort of. He's from Kankakee County. Just 550 or so pages of vivid detail about all of the sordid activities of the band you love to hate, as described in the Oliver Stone movie. In fact, that book was the one Stone used for the movie that starred Val Kilmer, in 91 or 92. Danny, that's the interview I never did that I would have loved to in rock and roll. You know, there's a bunch in sports as well. I never got to meet or interview either Bill Veeck, which is a real big regret, or George Halas, but of the rock and rollers, because he's a Chicagoan and because I like the Doors so much, I dropped the ball, never inviting Ray Manzarek over the years, or when we did invite him, never have any luck getting him on, because he continued to make music long after the Doors wrapped it up in 1971 or 72. But anyway, for all the Doors fans out there, sad day, 7 years ago today, Ray Manzarek.
Well, listen, I mean, you're going to have regrets, right, in terms of the guys you didn't get to interview, but hopefully it's not that long of a list, and you're going to get to do a different one with a different rocker, Dennis DeYoung, right? He's coming on the show soon?
Yes. So, yes, thank you for mentioning that. I've been talking with Dennis regularly lately. He checked in to eulogize Ed Farmer a few weeks ago with us, and he was hoping to come on this week, but he is in demand because of the pandemic, and he's got a new album soon to be released. So the co-founder of Styx is going to join you and me next week, right?
Look,
here
we are not all in the same boat, and when celebrities and rich people say that, I want to smack them. Some of us have nicer boats, let's be honest.
So very true. So to pay homage to the work of Ray Manzarek, let's go to Morrison Hotel, their fourth album, and bring you a little fine keyboard action. Who needs a bass player when you got a guy on keys who can do it? Scott Pitsednik from the 05 World Champion White Sox next on McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Dead blood in the streets, it's up to my ankles.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.